The Rookie is a free serialized audiobook meant for mature audiences. Written and performed by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. For links to order a young adult version of this book without all the cussing in print, ebook, or audiobook, visit scottsigler.com/therookie, one word. This podcast contains mature situations, adult language, and lots of violence. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, you sexy, scintillating, spectacular junkie. It's over! I am done with the final draft of Shakedown Book 1 of the Crypt series. I shipped that bad boy off to the publisher. There's one more light pass as the editor checks for continuity, grammar, spelling, and proper style, all that jazz. I expect that pass back in 2 to 4 weeks. Shouldn't take me long to review that one, so the book will probably move into print and ebook layout sometime in December 2022. Then audiobook production will begin. So while I don't have a release date yet, we are in the victory lap. I hope you enjoy this book. I have busted my ass on it for you. That's right, for you. As for The Rookie, after the episode you're about to hear, there are only 2 episodes left, which means our bodacious, outrageous, contagious Q&A livestream episode will soon be upon us. Wednesday, November 30th at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 1 a.m. GMT. I would love for you to join us. We will stream that show live at youtube.com/ScottSigler, twitch.tv/ScottSigler, and facebook.com/ScottSigler. A real girl herself will read questions to me, I'll answer live, and we'll be taking questions from the junkies in the chat room, where you could be hanging out with the other junkies. Do you have a question about The Rookie, the GFL, or the Siglerverse in general you'd like to get answered on that show? Email that question to info@emptyset.com. Now, let's get on to episode number 25 of The Rookie. Let's get you caught up on the story, and then we're all going to get a can of compressed air and clean out that gunk in your computer's keyboard. In this episode of The Rookie, Quentin makes his first trip to Earth as the Krakens prepare for the Tier 2 playoff game that could put them into Tier 1. But to win, Q has to make a sacrifice for his team, a sacrifice that no one would have thought possible. Find out what happens next on The Rookie, episode number 25. Quentin had never been to Earth. In fact, most citizens of the Purist Nation had never been there. Earth was, after all, the capital of the Planetary Union, the historical enemy of the Purist Nation. Earth was also called the cradle of Satan, the birthplace of evil, the home of the human betrayers and the brother killers. Centuries ago, the powerful people of Earth had cast out the faithful, sending Stuart and his followers on a perilous journey across the void. Only the hand of the High One himself had saved the chosen people, delivered them to a green place from which the Purist Nation flourished. At least, that was the story. Quentin couldn't help but believe some of it. That story, after all, had been drummed into his head since before he could speak. Yet that didn't dull his excitement as the touchback prepared to drop out of punch space near Earth orbit. Earth, the beginning of humanity. Regardless of Purist Nation's current politics, Earth was where it had all begun. Not just for the species, like Quentin could give a flying fuck about the species. Earth was the birthplace of football. Quentin could barely contain his excitement. What would he see first? The legendary Kraft Cheese Stadium? The 200-year-old Ford Orbital Stadium, site of 5 Galaxy Bowls, site of all the Earth Football League championships from 2482 until the end of the league in 2566? The Professional Football Hall of Fame in some place called Canton. Perhaps one of the many universities where they still played collegiate football, a historic, if quaint, anachronism. Some had even called Earth College football Tier 4 football, a place for people to play when they weren't good enough to cut it on a Tier 3 team. Rumor was, the entire Kraken squad would be guests at one of the most historical games in the sport. 800 years of tradition marked by a game with a team called Michigan versus a team called Ohio State. His excitement ran at such a high level, he almost forgot to be afraid of punch-out. Almost. The touchback shuddered as they slipped back into reality. View screens changed from a pitch black to a stunning view of a cloud-speckled blue world. Earth. A dozen orbital stations, the biggest only a 20th the size of the Asor Emperor II, floated in Earth's near space. Two of those stations had long, thin tubes running down towards the surface of Earth, stretching out so far that the silvery tendrils faded away into nothing. Quentin wondered if they were some kind of communications assembly. It was the most highly populated human planet at 18 billion beings, although a good 5 billion of those were of the Wittok and the dolphin species that lived in the planet's vast oceans. The Wittokians living there, of course, were the original catalyst that had resulted in Mason Stewart and his followers leaving Earth on their long pilgrimage to the Promised Land. That anti-alien bias had permeated every aspect of purest nation life. Quentin now knew this, and knew that he could never go back to living in such a place, not when he fought on the field with his alien teammates day in and day out. He had no place to call home. Maybe someday, after he retired, he'd come and live on Earth. The touchback veered towards one of the orbital stations with a long tendril. As it drew close, Quentin saw that the tendril was actually far from thin. It was a massively thick tube that stretched down and down and down. Like other orbital stations, this one had many long piers that jutted out from a central radius. Each pier reached out for miles, dotted with ships of all makes and colors. The touchback gently approached a pier and shuttled lightly as mechanical arms reached out to lash the bus to an anchoring port.
Team disembark. All players disembark.
As the team walked out, Quentin turned to Itzhak.
Hey, aren't we taking the shuttle down? Shuttle? Not on Earth, buddy. No shuttle traffic allowed. Everyone takes the tube to get to and from the surface.
A recorded voice droned over hidden loudspeakers.
Welcome to Hudson Bay Station. Please watch your step on the moving sidewalk. No weapons of any kind are allowed on Hudson Bay Station. Welcome to Hudson Bay Station.
Just outside the hatch, a long, two-band moving sidewalk ran off into the distance, towards the station's central spine. The band on the outside moved at a decent clip, while the central band seemed to move twice as fast. Just past the moving sidewalk was a large, clear tube. Inside the tube were two more tubes, filled side by side, each with water. Bubbles and bits of flotsam showed the nearest tube flowed towards the station's core, while the one on the other side flowed out to the end of the pier. Inside the tube, Quentin saw Wittokians, dolphins, and Lee Key swimming along like fish in a packed aquarium. The team filtered onto the walkway, which briskly moved them along the pier. Quentin watched Itzhak casually step onto the first band. As he moved away, he carefully stepped onto the central band. He shot down the pier, moving at least 20 miles an hour. Quentin followed suit. He stepped on the first band and almost lost his balance at the sudden shift in momentum. He steadied himself, then stepped onto the second band to experience another surge of acceleration. He jogged down the central strip until he caught up with Itzhak.
Man, why don't they use shuttles? Because they don't want to get blown up, that's why. Anything that gets below the 80,000 feet boundary is instantly attacked and destroyed by a flight of Kredirakian fighters. Destroyed? But why?
Itzhak just looked at Quentin for a moment, a quizzical expression on his face.
Are you serious?
Quentin felt a little stupid, but he nodded.
Because of the suicide attacks. Purest nation terrorists. They attack any chance they get, blow themselves up as long as they can inflict heavy casualties.
Quentin felt defensive anger swarm to the front of his thoughts.
Yeah, and what makes you think they're from the purest nation?
Itzhak put a hand on Quentin's shoulder.
Don't get mad at me, Q. There's a dozen terrorist groups on Earth, and after an attack, they contact the media and actually claim responsibility. Their goal is to supposedly drive all aliens off the planet. The purest repatriation assembly is the worst. 2 years ago, the PRA managed to nuke a Wittok city in the Atlantic, killed 3 million Wittok, dolphins, and humans. And that was just the initial blast. That area of the Atlantic has been utterly devastated. They're still working on the radiological cleanup. Some people wanted to bring in a big team of Quith engineers who are experts on cleaning up radiation, but there's too much suspicion that the Quith will squat on the spot the way they did on Ionath and on Wittok.
Virak overheard the conversation and stormed over.
Those fears are stupid. Why would we want to start a colony on a planet that does not live in freedom, a planet still controlled by the Kretorakians?
Itzhak shrugged.
That's their citizens for you. You know how suspicious they are. But hey, if you'd lived through 280 years of terrorism, your people would be a little suspicious too.
The walkway zipped along the pier, passing a regular progression of dock locks. Most locks were closed, but some were open, and Quentin saw just about every species represented. The fast-moving sidewalk seemed to control congestion on the pier, but it was still a very busy place indeed.
I hope there's no construction this time. I'd really like to get down to the surface sometime in the near future.
There's always construction.
The walkway entered a large, noisy, domed open space. Ornate lights lined the ceiling, and voices in all languages repeatedly echoed through the cavernous space.
The red zone is for loading and unloading of passengers only. Please do not loiter in the red zone. No weapons are allowed on Hudson Bay Station. If you are carrying a weapon of any kind, please report to the nearest constable and turn it in. Carrying a weapon on Hudson Bay Station is a capital offense. The red zone is for loading and unloading of passengers.
The team moved towards a huge line of beams. Waist-high silver stands dotted the length of the line, a red, velvety rope hanging between each of the stands. Off in the distance, the line emptied into a cavernous, hexagonal central area. A massive circle, at least 200 feet in diameter, dotted each of the hexagon's sides. Three of the circles were nothing but a large blank space surrounded by a wide ring of deck. A huge platform sat in the center of the fourth circle. Concentric rings of seats filled the platform. Different colors denoted different sections, like slices of pizza, and each color had a different type of seat to accommodate either Key, Sklorno, Quith, Leaky, or Human. Being steadily exited the line and moved onto the platform, taking their respective seats. Once the seats filled, some species sat in seats that didn't quite fit them right, but they didn't seem to mind much, the platform simply dropped out of sight. The last two platforms were blocked off by rings of orange and white barrels with small, flashing orange lights on top. Tools and equipment littered the area, although Quentin saw no workers. The sign read, "Your tax dollars at work. Upgrades to the Armstrong elevator. Faster drop engines to be completed September
26, 84. Oh, fuck! Construction! I swear they never finished with this place!
Two platforms are down? Oh, we're gonna be here forever."
Quentin waited patiently. While the line did move slowly, it didn't bother him as much as it seemed to bother some of his teammates. Apparently, they'd never spent 4 or 5 hours standing in line while the starvation trucks dispensed food to an entire city of hungry people. Finally, the Kraken's players reached the end of the line. Platform number 3 rose up like some giant leviathan, noiselessly filling the giant empty circle that matched its circumference. They wandered onto the platform along with the other passengers. Quentin found a seat next to Itzhak, sat down, and waited.
"Quentin, have you ever been on the chute before?"
Quentin shook his head.
"I hope you don't get motion sick. And if you do, please don't puke on me."
"Please fasten your seat restraints. The platform will descend in 10 seconds.
Quentin watched Itzhak fasten a seatbelt around his waist and followed suit. He silently counted to 10, and then the bottom dropped out of his world. The huge platform simply fell. His hands flew to the armrests, fingers digging into the worn plastic. Falling. Falling. all around the platform. Metal walls slid by at a sickening speed. Then suddenly, the walls were gone, and he was looking at nothing but blue sky and clouds. His stomach roiled, and he felt dizzy. Itzhak's warning echoed in his thoughts, and he wondered if, indeed, he might puke. He closed his eyes and gritted his teeth against an onset of nausea. After 5 minutes, just when he thought he couldn't handle it anymore, the seat seemed to push against his ass, and the floor seemed to press against his feet. They were decelerating. Quentin tried to calm his breathing for the next 2 minutes as the platform steadily pushed against him. Finally, it slowed to an almost imperceptible speed and stopped with a slight shaking jar.
Welcome to Hudson Bay Surface Station. We hope you enjoy your stay.
Quentin followed along as the passengers disembarked. The ground station looked like an exact copy of the orbital station, with the exception that the walls were clear and offered a breathtaking view of Hudson Bay and the surrounding complex. Waves crashed into clear walls, sending up clouds of droplets that sparkled in the sunlight before misting back down. He had never seen so much water before, yet the footing was as rock solid as dry land. To the east sprawled the Hudson Bay Airport, a flat, rectangular 2 miles across and 3 miles long. The airport, elevated about 100 feet above the water level, rested on 24 thick black pylons that ran below the water's surface. Each pylon, he was told, connected to a subsurface pontoon some 300 feet below. Dynamic positioning systems controlled the depth and position of each pontoon, ensuring fixed positioning even in the worst storms. He watched a triangular passenger plane land, escorted in by a flight of boxy-looking Kretorakian fighters. To the north sat Quentin's destiny, Hudson Bay Stadium. Unlike the airport, the bottom levels of the stadium dome actually rested below the water, with the playing field sitting some 150 feet beneath the surface level. A compartmentalized triple-walled hull kept the Hudson Bay waters in check, and rumor had it the stadium housed over 1,000 water pumps to control leaks ranging from a tiny pinhole to the kind of gaping wound caused by a terrorist attack. The massive lower bowl also rested below the surface, the top seats just peeking out above the waterline. The second and third decks rested within a gleaming, crystal-clear dome that rose hundreds of feet into the air. To the south sat the floating wonder of Hudson Bay City. Centuries ago, the city was built to house human and Witak workers, harvesting untold amounts of oil and natural gas from deep below the surface. The high-tech boomtown saw many decades of prosperous growth until the natural resources started to run out, about the same time demand for those resources dropped due to new technologies.
City officials then used the platform's isolation as a trump card to win a contract for the Earth's second orbital elevator, the first having been built over the English Channel. With the orbital elevator in place, Hudson Bay City blossomed. As one of two main hubs for interstellar commerce, Hudson Bay's economy transformed from drilling to shipping. City officials also lured tourist dollars by building the largest football stadium on Earth. The city's former isolation turned out to be its strongest asset. Set in the middle of Hudson Bay, the stadium was easily defended from the airborne terrorist attacks that plagued many other Earth facilities. Masal the Efficient scurried about, his helpers gathering the Kraken's players.
Attention! Attention! We are taking the tram to the stadium! Please follow me!
The mass of players moved towards the underwater tram that would take them to the stadium. The area around them was clear of other beings. Quentin noticed black uniformed human police all around the platform, each one armed, each one staring at the crowds of travelers with a look that promised severe trouble if anyone approached the football players. Fleeting shadows slashed across the floor. Kretorakian soldiers flying through the complex, scouting for trouble. Quentin smiled. Hudson Bay City had trouble, all right. Trouble in the form of the Ionath Krakens. Trouble for the Texas Earthlings. One last practice.
One last practice before the biggest game of the year. Quentin flowed through the plays as if he'd been created just for this one game, as if he'd been meticulously engineered to be a perfect quarterbacking machine. Lines of energy seemed to radiate from all his receivers. He saw them all in perfect clarity, delivering the ball in tight, rope-like spirals that arrived dead center in passing windows no larger than 10 inches across. He had to be perfect. Yasud Murphy had the potential to be a great running back, but he was at least two seasons away from that level. Even then, it was doubtful he'd match Mitchell Fayad's powerful, punishing style. The defense was not going to consider Yasud a major threat. Most of the defensive pressure would come via blitzing and extra defensive backs, and probably both at the same time. The Earthlings would make the Krakens win the game on the ground. Well, fuck that. Quentin was going to beat them through the air, drive that ball so far down their throats they'd shit leather for a month. Everything had finally come together. He knew the moves, the speed, the tendencies of Haywick, Scarborough, Mesquitic, Denver, Milford, and even Ridgefield. And it wasn't just the wide receivers. He had Warburg and Kobayashi down cold, and fullback Tom Perlis was a hidden receiving weapon coming out of the backfield. Hot, hot, hot! The ball slapped his hands and he dropped back, watching the Kraken's defensive backs try in vain to cover the Kraken's receivers. Quentin checked through, his mind racing at biocomputer speed. Haywick covered. Scarborough open in another 10 yards. Warburg open on a short hook. Back to Scarborough, open, as he knew she would be. He fired the pass in a straight line, drilling Scarborough right on the money 25 yards downfield. Scarborough cut upfield, adding another 6 yards before Perth gave her a little tap. Full contact was out. They didn't want any last-second injuries gumming up the works. Next play. He dropped back and fired a long TD strike to Haywick, who was playing so well she now had to be considered one of the top 5 receivers in all of Tier 2. Next play. Short hook to Kobayashi, who cut upfield and went down easy on a light hit from John Tweedy. Next play. Quentin dropped back, checked off his 3 receivers, all covered. He turned and threw the safety valve pass to Yasud Murphy, who hauled in the tight pass and cut upfield. The snap was so loud, it stopped everyone in their tracks. Yasud had planted his right foot, and when he cut upfield, the snap rang out like a gunshot. He let out a yell, then fell down, both hands holding his right knee before his body hit the ground. The ball rolled free, wobbling to a slow stop. 43 spirits collectively sank. Doc floated onto the field as Yasud writhed, his face a twisted mask of agony, his hand still clutched on his knee in white-knuckled desperation. A freak injury from nothing more than making a sharp upfield cut. Hokor barked from his floating cart.
Move to tailback! Kopor, you're in at fullback!
4 days from the biggest game of the year, the last obstacle to Tier 1 ball, and the Ionath Krakens had just run out of tailbacks. Hudson Bay Station had guest quarters for up to 8 teams, complete with office space, hotel rooms. It was fully self-contained. Quentin walked into Hokor's office and sat down. Hokor stared at the wall, his eye a translucent mauve. Quentin waited for the coach to acknowledge his presence, but the little Quith leader just sat there. Hey, coach. Hokor turned suddenly, his eye instantly going clear.
Barnes, sorry. I didn't see you there.
It's all right, coach. You strategizing? Hokor's fur ruffled once, then lay flat.
Strategizing, yes. Trying to find an answer for our lack of tailbacks.
And?
There is no answer. You'll have to carry the game, Quentin. Perlis can run, but the Earthlings won't consider him a threat, nor should they. He's a great blocking back and good for short yardage, but basically worthless as an open field runner. They're going to blitz on every play.
Quentin sat for a second, considering his words. Hokor started staring at the wall again. Coach, There is one answer.
Hokor turned to look at him once more.
Which is?
I'll play tailback.
Hokor kept staring.
I've got the size and the speed. I know the offense inside and out.
Hokor nodded.
Except for the small detail of who'll play quarterback. Do you think Itzhak can handle the Earthling's defensive backs?
I'm not talking about Itzhak.
Hokor looked blank for another second. Then his eye flooded a deep black.
Absolutely not. I will not have that betrayer run my team ever again.
Quentin leaned forward.
It's our only chance, coach. You gotta let him back in.
No, I'd rather lose than see him on the field again.
Oh, would you? Would you really rather lose than have him at quarterback? Because I'd rather do anything than lose. It doesn't matter what he did, coach. All that matters is that we give ourselves the best possible chance to win tomorrow.
Hokor sat silent for a moment.
We won't even get a chance to practice.
Who cares? It's Donald fucking Pine, coach. Remember him? The guy who won 2 Galaxy Bowls? It's not like he dropped off into retard land and the 1 week he's been gone. Get his ass in here.
Hokor stared, his eyes slowly fading from deep black back to clear.
You would do this? You would give up the quarterback spot in the biggest game of the year? That's not like you, Barnes.
Quentin shrugged.
Well, it's like me now, coach. I want to win. I want to play Tier 1 ball.
Do you know what you're doing? Do you understand the level of punishment a tailback takes in a game?
I'll do whatever I have to do to reach Tier 1.
Hokor said nothing. They stared at each other for a long minute, the seconds ticking away on some unseen slow-motion clock. Finally, Hokor pressed a button on his desk. Masal the Efficient appeared as if he'd been standing just outside the door the entire time.
How may I help you, Shamakath? Find Donald Pine. Get him in here immediately.
You have been listening to The Rookie, Book 1 of the Galactic Football League series. Produced by Ariok Morningstar, with post-production by Steve Rickyberg. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. For more information on the author and more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song The Kids Are Coming For You by the band Superweapon. Superweaponband.com. You're kind of sick.